Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Nibbānaṃ paramaṃ sukhanti. This is the day before the second full moon of the Vassa, which tells us there's only 1 month to go for this rains retreat. It's always a time to ask oneself, how well am I spending my time? The saying which I gave at the beginning of this talk, Nibbānaṃ paramaṃ sukhaṃ, is the Buddha saying that Nibbāna is the highest happiness. So this is what's on offer if one follows the instructions of this retreat, if one follows the instructions of the path, if one puts wholehearted effort into the Eightfold Path. And the degree to which one puts that degree of commitment into this practice will be reflected by the amount of happiness one gets in monastic life. So if one is not receiving sufficient happiness, contentment, satisfaction for monastic life, it isn't the monastic life is wrong. It's not that the Buddha taught an inaccurate path. It's that one isn't really putting forth full effort in the right way. Which is why we always have to review the instructions, to make sure we understand well what we're supposed to be doing and how we're supposed to be doing it. And having understood those instructions, samadhiti, right view it's called, then we actually have to put forth the effort to follow those instructions. If we just mess around and we don't keep those instructions, then we're wasting our time. And when we don't get happiness, we don't get deep meditation, when things don't go well, it's obvious why they're not going well. We're not following the instructions. The Buddha taught that there's five things called the five indriyas, five what's usually called controlling faculties, which power this practice. And if these five controlling faculties are weak in any area, then you'll find that your practice has no oomph. You will not be able to gain those happinesses of the path. Someone just mentioned one of my favorite suttas, the Dhammacetya Sutta, the monuments to the Dhamma, where, as many of you would know, that King Pasenadi remarked to the Buddha just before the king was about to pass away, how he loved going to the monasteries, because in those monasteries all the monks were happy, they were smiling. He said, surely this must be because they have got these attainments on the path, attainments like jhana, attainments like stream winning, once returning, non-returning, arahat. And the Buddha replied, yes, great king, that's how it should be, that's how it is, not should be, that's how it is. That when the monks gain those deep meditations, when they gain those great attainments on the path, see the Dhamma and release themselves from the defilements, then they're weakening dukkha. Suffering is disappearing. And you can expect them to be happy. This path is a way of happiness, of great happiness, of much higher happinesses you can ever experience in the world by doing things, by achieving things. At least have the understanding, the right view, that this is the path for ending suffering. And if you have that degree of understanding, that should give you some motivation, actually to spend the time wisely, rather than wasting time. Days and nights relentlessly passing. How well am I spending my time? There are in the 10 reflections of one gone forth, the reflection that when it's about time for you to leave this world, when you're on your deathbed, And your friends in the holy life ask you, have you attained anything on this path? Have you attained a jhana or stream winning or whatever? How will you answer? Or will you be embarrassed by saying that in all this time that I haven't achieved? Are you going to be like those monks who the cowherd Gopika fed for one whole rainy season, looking after them, doing all the duties for these two monks, and then later when she died, she was born, reborn in the Tawatingsa realm, and these two Scallywag monks were only reborn as Gandhavas in a very low heaven realm. And she went to tell them off, I've been working so hard for you guys, and this is all you've got. So please, don't be like that. I'm saying this because it gives one the incentive. The incentive not to be afraid, not to struggle too much, but incentive to really look into what are these instructions, what am I supposed to be doing, and am I fulfilling those instructions? Those instructions are so clear. They should be so clear. To keep all the rules of the core what? All of the rules. To keep your precepts, Anangarika precepts, novice precepts, monk precepts. And if you just do that much, you'll find that you have what's called in the suttas anavajjasukha, the blameless happiness. A happiness comes from keeping your commitment to these rules. Each one of you have come here voluntarily. You've asked to become an Anagarika, you've asked to become a novice, you've asked to become a monk. So you have a commitment to these rules, these practices. So please keep those, otherwise you find that your meditation will never take off. You will never find those happinesses of the path. This great Nibbana, this ultimate happiness which the Buddha is presenting to you, you're not going to be accepting it. You'll just die just an ordinary person, just like everybody else. What a waste of a chance that was. So having understood what the instructions are, keep those precepts, keep those core what. And also practice restraint as well. The sense restraint, which means staying in your hut. Which means not talking. Not writing letters, making telephone calls. Restraining yourself. Not getting too busy. Because when we have sense restraint, the Buddha called that was Abhayaseke Sukha, the happiness, the unblemished happiness. We have the opportunity to do these in this monastery. This is a monastery where you're very well protected, where the resources, the requisites are just so good, so you don't have to do this stuff. So don't do it. When we don't do this sort of stuff, we get another type of happiness, a peaceful happiness, a happiness of contentment. We need these indriyas, especially the first and the last of the five indriyas, the controlling faculties, what guide us and give us the oomph to our practice, which are the first two. The first is faith, and the last is wisdom, which always must go together. We have faith that this is a path worth treading. We have faith in the teachings and the teacher. We have enough faith in ourselves and our own ability to do this. If any of those qualities is lacking, you'll find that you haven't got the ability to go forward in one's meditation, in gaining this happiness. So check how much faith have you got. And if there's not much faith there, then try and increase it, if at all possible. If not, you're wasting your time. And have you really got faith in the Buddha, the Dhamma and the Sangha? Have you really got faith in these teachings, in this path as it's practiced in this monastery? Have you got faith in jhanas, that they're possible for you? And if you follow this path, this is where they will lead. Hopefully many of you have got far enough to actually to know for yourself that yes, this is actually how those jhanas are achieved. by this beautiful middle way of keeping precepts, sense restraint, nekama, sankapa, the thoughts of renunciation, the thoughts of giving up, the thoughts of solitude, the thoughts of being at peace, being a hermit, reclusiveness. All of those are right thought. The mind is inclining to the jhanas, to freedom, to release, and to the nibbana which comes after that. So many times the Buddha said, not just that sukhino cittang samadhiyati, not just from happiness the mind enters samadhi, enters jhana. But he says, from that samadhi, that jhana, comes yathabhuta jnana dasanam. Only from samadhi, from samma samadhi, the Buddha said again and again and again, comes seeing things as they truly are. This is why we need faith. We need the wisdom to understand that all our ideas and concepts are not to be trusted in if they don't arise from samadhi. All one's ideas of dependent origination, all one's ideas of what happens to the jitta after one is at arahat, all of those ideas are not worth anything until one has gained samadhi. Because you should know that without that samadhi, these five hindrances, summed up in desire and ill will bend the truth so you'll never know what's really there. You'll only see what you want to see, what fits your worldview, what is agreeable to you, but what's challenging, what really gets under your skin, what really is truth, but which you don't want to admit, that you will never be able to see. So many people in this world live in denial, creating this facade in their minds which they believe in which they try and fit the whole world into their way of looking. When they struggle with this, they usually die before they see that it's not the world which is wrong. It is the way of looking at it was the wrong. We bring into this world all these biases of view, perception and thought, what the Buddha called michaditti, wrong view. And we can't overcome that just by reason. And the Buddha said just after his enlightenment, this Dhamma, this great Dhamma which the Buddha discovered under the Bodhi tree, is not to be attained by mere reasoning. You can't do it that way, not by inference. You do need the data, just the experiences born of samadhi, and the power conferred on you by that samadhi, the superpower of mindfulness, I call it, and the data of seeing these amazing states of consciousness, called the jhanas, where things have actually disappeared. Things which you've taken for granted as being essential to existence and to yourself are no longer there. With that power and those experiences, then you can actually see the way things truly are. And there you see what the Buddha saw, you see emptiness, you see dependent origination there, you see non-self there, but until you've got that superpower mindfulness, until you've got the data, the experiences of jhana, basically you're wasting your time even thinking about these things. Which is one of the reasons why when I give these talks, I go on and on and on about meditation, on and on and on about gaining jhana, on and on and on about samadhi. The reason why is because all the talk in the world about the higher states of wisdom, either you agree with it or you reject it, either way is not all that much difference, because you're not seeing it for yourself. So here I want to allow people to see these things for themselves by getting into these jhanas first of all. And to empower that, we do need a little bit of faith. Faith in these teachings is really worthwhile. Faith in the teacher and faith in ourselves. Faith in these teachings, I try and inculcate that just by showing that there's an incremental increase of happiness as one practices on this path. Why keep precepts? Because they lead to happiness. Why keep all the core what? Sometimes that you break your rules when you're alone, when no one's watching. You could very easily have closed-circuit TVs in every hut, but would that really do anything? You could use psychic powers and check people out, but would that really do anything? What's most important that one realizes why one is keeping these rules? And if one realizes it's for one's own happiness and well-being, when one experiences that, then you don't need closed-circuit TVs, you don't need Big Brother watching over you. Because you know it's in your own interest. And you find out that that interest is the increase in happiness. So in order to gain faith, just ask yourself, what is this happiness? What is the happiness you get out of living here? Or would you prefer to go into the lay life and try that type of happiness? Find out what happiness truly is. And then your faith will be supported by wisdom. The wisdom which the Buddha taught, that restraint is a path to happiness. Self-discipline, going against the stream, restraining these asavas, this movement of the mind which goes out into the world, doing things, thinking, restraining that so the mind stays at home. It goes inwards rather than outwards. And this is what the precepts are there for, to stop the mind going out too far. Sense restraint keeps it further inside. And meditation, jhanas, keeps it right inside. The mind staying with the mind, not going out into the world, not going out into the body even, certainly not going out into thinking. Staying right inside where it belongs. The mind being with the mind, that's what jhanas are like. This is the asavas not being allowed to go anywhere. Restraint, and that you find is the greatest bliss you've experienced. The faith in the Buddha's path is being supported by the wisdom born of experience. And then one has the opportunity to understand why the Buddha taught these great things. Why the Four Noble Truths are happiness and the path leading to happiness, unhappiness and the cause of unhappiness. Four Noble Truths. The Buddha said that if you see the Four Noble Truths, then you're a stream winner. Understanding those Four Noble Truths. And you see the way I put it there, happiness, nibbana, the highest happiness, bliss. In jhanas you come really close to that. That's why the Buddha said in the Latukikopama Sutta that the bliss of jhanas is called Sambodhi Sukha, enlightenment bliss. So close, it's worthy of that name. It's not enlightenment, but it's close enough. Close enough to give you a taste, to give you insight into what the highest bliss truly is. Commentaries say stream winning is seeing nibbana. Jhanas is seeing next door to nibbana. That's why these jhanas are so powerful. So this is what's there if one follows this path. From samadhi you see things they truly are. So as develops this incremental increase in happiness, which gives you the incremental increase in faith and wisdom. These three, as it were, go together. Happiness, wisdom, faith. All moving around and supporting one another. As you get close to the heart of this Buddhist path. As well as these five indriyas, you can see that there's other things come up. There's those two indriyas. The other three of the five indriyas also have to come up. And those other parts of the five indriyas of virya, sati and samadhi. Virya is this energy. And as I mentioned in a talk about a year ago, It Virya comes from the word Vira, which is like a hero. It's like heroic effort. It's the effort of someone who's unusual in this world. And that degree of heroic effort is going against the stream of doing, of craving. People in the world can have a great deal of effort, but they put it in the wrong places. Effort also needs to be supported by faith and wisdom, because the effort has to go into mindfulness, into knowing, and taken away from all this doing business. Most of you come from Western cultures. Western cultures is known for just how much it does. Compulsive and obsessive doers and makers and dreamers. Westerners don't know how to stop and be still. All the effort goes in the wrong place. And what do we get? We just get gridlock cities in which live gridlock minds. Just great traffic jams of thought going in their brains. Never actually passing through anything, but always getting stuck until they die. Never knowing peace, freedom, wisdom, liberation. Doing, that's what happens. How much do you want to do in this world? What do you want to achieve in this world? So what? Big deal. No matter what you do, it's all going to disappear. After a few generations, no one will remember you. What's the point of doing things? Even this big monastery here is already falling apart. 20, 50, 100 years, who knows, it might no longer be here at all. It's all gone, maybe just a theme park. Probably what will happen to this place after a while. The commercialization of Buddhism, just a theme park. Just go and look in Ajahn Brahm's cave, $10 to have a sit in there for 5 minutes. Probably put in a little model of there of some monk meditating. Who knows what's going to happen to this? So usually what happens, as soon as you build something pure, it decays over time, just like the human body. Starts off pure. Little by little, the standards slip. Little by little, it becomes harder to live the pure monastic life. Little by little, the whole thing decays. It's the nature of things. You try and hold it back, but that's how this will happen. What's the point of doing? Isn't the point of having a monastery? Not the buildings, but the people who live in it. Isn't the point of having a meditation hall? Not just having a beautiful building, but having a place where people can meditate and gain the jhanas. The whole point of this place is to facilitate the Eightfold Path. The Eightfold Path is not to facilitate the monastery. This is all for one reason, for giving opportunity to develop enlightenment. So to do this, the energy has to be put in the right areas. The virya, the heroic effort, actually to break through delusion, to get in those jhanas and see things as they truly are, not as you imagine them to be, not as you argue that they are to be, who's right and who's wrong. You're wasting time, precious time, by just holding all of your ideas and concepts to be truth. And Ajahn Chah, what did he say? After the first five years you have 0% wisdom. And after, 10 years you have 5% or something wisdom, 95% delusion still. He really laid it on the line. Just, you know, how? We always think we're wise. But how actually stupid we really are. I think somebody said, there's an interesting story, that they asked in a public talk, how many people in this talk are above average intelligence? About 90% of the people put their hand up. It showed that 40% were in denial of their stupidity, because only half can be above average intelligence. Do you think you're above average intelligence? Of course you all do. Half of you are in denial. Do you think that you know the Buddha's teachings? all of you who aren't Aryas are in denial, if you say you do. When stream winning happens, it will completely overturn everything you ever thought about Buddhism. The suttas which you think you understood, you realize you never understood, but now you do. That's what stream winning does. It sees what is hard to see. What does it say in those suttas? What the Putujanas say is sukha, is happiness. The Aryas say is dukkha. What the ordinary people, the non-Aryans, say is dukkha. The Aryans say is sukha. So which one are you? Are you an Aryan or are you a Putujana? If you're on a Putujana, whatever you say is happiness, you are wrong. That's dukkha. Whatever you say is suffering, you are wrong. That's happiness. So how much do you know? Don't even know what's happiness and what's suffering. This is why we should suspend all of those ideas. It would be wonderful if we had that degree of faith. What is that old story in the commentaries or Visuddhimagga somewhere about that teacher, that Buddhist teacher, who didn't like to have any disciples because they're too troublesome. They would never listen to what they're told. The teacher would give them some teachings, would work really hard to try and instruct them and guide them and get their requisites for them and do everything for them, and then the students would just do what they wanted. So this one teacher, he wouldn't have any students until this one guy came along and said, I want to be your student. He said, students never follow instructions. And so the teacher said, okay, I will test you. If you really think you're going to follow instructions, walk in a straight line, starting here, keep on walking. And this student had enough faith, just kept on walking in that direction, didn't turn left, didn't turn right, went through bushes, through brambles, until he came to a lake. But he didn't stop, because the teacher never told him to stop or go around the lake, just keep on walking in this direction. So he just carried on walking, right into the lake. Went straight on walking right into the lake until it reached his waist, carried on walking until it reached his neck, carried on walking until it reached his nose. Only then did the teacher say, stop, I can use you. That's a sort of faith for a teacher. Now, have you got that sort of faith? Have you got that sort of faith in the Buddha? Not in me, but in the Buddha. What did the Buddha teach you? Did he tell you to compromise your rules? Did he tell you to not keep your duties to your teachers, the watas? Did he tell you to sleep in the morning? Did he tell you to eat too much? Did he tell you just to not meditate and just fit away your time? What did your teacher tell you to do? He told you to strive on the Eightfold Path, to perfect your virtue, perfect your samadhi, in other words, get jhanas, perfect your wisdom. That's what he told you to do, not to go around arguing with people, what's right, what's wrong, not to go around doing those sorts of things, but to practice. So when we have that degree of faith, we put the energy where it's supposed to go, developing the Eightfold Path, abandoning craving. This is what the Buddha said, abandon craving. Abandoning is a non-doing. Have any craving come up, what I want, just throw it away, don't follow it. Craving's not that hard to stop, you just notice it, stop it. It's only when we don't want to stop craving, it keeps on going. You haven't really got the faith or the wisdom. You know, oh yeah, that's what the Buddha said, but it doesn't apply to me. Or it doesn't apply to this moment. Or, you know, I know better. Sort of, you know, the Buddha was Indian so many years ago. What does he know? So we know better. So because we always think we know better, that's why we never succeed in the practice. So we look at what we're doing and put that faith into our virya, into our heroic efforts to actually to cultivate this path. You know the instructions. Follow them. Mindfulness helps you follow those instructions. Because mindfulness is always looking over you, the supervisor, saying, what am I doing? What am I doing? What am I doing? And mindfulness always also remembers those instructions, keeps them in mind. So why when one is meditating, what does one do when one meditates? What's the first thing one does after sitting down? Establishes mindfulness. So one sets up the supervisor, which is always overlooking, what's this guy doing? It's like a closed-circuit TV camera inside of yourself, with mindfulness watching the monitor. So if you slip off into thoughts, into fantasies, the supervisor watching you sees immediately. And not just sees, but intervenes, does something about it, stops you. That stopping is an abandoning of craving. It is actually a non-doing. You're starting to do something, but the supervisor stops you. This is the job of that mindfulness. If we cultivate that degree of mindfulness throughout our day, throughout our monastic life, it becomes incredibly powerful. We know the instructions, we've got faith in them. Therefore, the supervisor's got power. If we've got no faith in them, the supervisor can say all sorts of things. Mindfulness can say, you know, you're just starting to thinking of women. You're starting to think of, you know, what you're going to do when this rain retreat ends. You're starting to think of all sorts of worldly stuff. But you've got no faith in the Buddha's teachings. Mindfulness can tell you, you're not following the teachings. But you won't listen. You think it doesn't apply to you. Or you know better. So mindfulness is a supervisor which we have faith enough to listen to. We set the parameters of our meditation, like we set the parameters of our day, like the Buddha set the parameters of monastic life. There's certain things which you can do, which are conducive to the keeping of virtue, to simplicity, to sense restraint, conducive to samadhi, conducive to wisdom, conducive to liberation. Those things which are conducive to these things, those are within our parameters. There are other things which we know just create problems and difficulties, which aren't part of the path, which should never be done in a monastery, which should never be done in your mind. There was one monk some years ago who was having trouble with sexual fantasies. He went to Ajahn Chah to ask for some advice. Help me, he said to Ajahn Chah. Whenever I meditate, always thinking of this and that. Ajahn Chah said, I can help you. I can cure you. Ajahn Chah said, the next one prayer, this is the day when people give talks to the lay people. He said, you go up on that tamat, on the dhamma seat, and you give a talk on all the sexual fantasies you've been thinking in the last week. You tell all the lay people what you've been doing. He said, I guarantee that'll cure you. Of course, that monk didn't have the guts to do that. That's why he was never cured. He disrobed eventually. So if you've got those problems, how about next Wednesday, when I'm off on my retreat, you can come up here and tell everybody what you've been doing. Probably some people will be very fascinated. But you'll be very embarrassed. So this is actually our hiriyotapa, sense of shame and fear of wrongdoing, which is also part of mindfulness. Again, it empowers mindfulness to make sure we keep within the parameters of our meditation, of monastic life, to make sure that if you are eating the food which is donated by these lay people, if you're wearing their robes, living in these huts which the lay people have supplied and monks like myself have built for you, are you worthy of this support? What are you doing? So that hiriyotapa, the sense of shame, and the understanding of karmic results, and say, well look, if I'm going to eat this food, if I'm going to drink this tea, if I'm going to wear these robes, if I'm going to live in these huts, if I'm going to enjoy all the benefits of this monastic life, I better make sure that I deserve them. So you strive to put a limit on your mind and make sure that you don't do things which other lay supporters would be upset about, which your fellows in monastic life would look down upon, and which you would feel unworthy of monastic life. So that way the mindfulness becomes empowered, and when you're meditating even, the mindfulness begins so sharp. It sees the mind just go off, even just an inch, and it stops it. No, this is beyond the guidelines. With that degree of mindfulness, the path is easy to follow. You don't waste time going to the left or the right. You go straight. Buddhopatipanna, the straight practice, direct practice. With that degree of mindfulness, you find that the path is easy, quick, and the results come very smoothly and beautifully, and bliss comes upon bliss. Sometimes I've been teaching this for so many years. Why is it that some people don't even get it? Because they go to the left, they go to the right, look at this thing, look at that thing, they never follow the instructions. Never follow the instructions wholeheartedly, with mindfulness. There's never much uddhupatipanna, straight practice. Sit down, never really set up mindfulness. Mind goes here, mind goes there, goes into sleep, goes into thinking, goes into planning. Bit of this, a bit of that. So keep that mindfulness very strong. Set up mindfulness. Set up just the parameters. Put some core what into mindfulness. This is what I'm supposed to do during this meditation. This is the path I'm going to follow. Present moment awareness, silence, watching the breath, arousing the beautiful breath. Nimittas, jhanas, go for the limit of this. The path is very clear, but you don't follow it. There's not enough mindfulness to keep you on track. And if you have that mindfulness, that virya, samadhi, comes along, and that really starts to be a power. Perhaps that's the last of the, no, not the last of the powers, wisdom is really the last of the indriyas which really arises, but that samadhi becomes very, very strong. When you have samadhi, all the other indriyas can somehow be empowered, because the samadhi, the one-pointedness of mind, starts to arouse great happiness. When the mind, or all the energy, goes into one thing, focused, the mind has this tremendous sense of happiness, sense of ease, a sense of freedom. We think that freedom means going here and going there. That, as I keep on saying, is called the freedom of desire. Where you allow desire to go wherever you want. In fact, you become the prisoner of desire, pulled and pushed in so many directions by desire. That's why the Buddha said you're fettered by craving. Craving pulls you and pushes you backwards and forwards. And people call that freedom, the freedom of desire. I can do whatever I want to do. The point is that desire is making you do that. It's not what you want to do, it's what desire makes you do. There's no freedom there at all. People who just follow their desires end up getting very, very dissatisfied, frustrated, depressed. That's no freedom at all. That's a fake freedom. But the other type of freedom, which I'm talking about here, which the Buddha was talking about, the Nibbana freedom, is the freedom from desires. Where the desires are suppressed, where the desires are abandoned, where the desires eventually completely annihilated. That's called the freedom from desires. So one sits one-pointed, with no desires able to shake you. You become the sage like a mountain. Nothing makes you quiver. Why? because you're free from desires. It's desires which make you move. It's desires which make you shake. It's desires which make you fear. It's desires which keep the wheel of samsara rolling around. Here you're becoming free from those. When have you ever felt freedom from desires? In samadhi, that's when. Because when you're still in samadhi, there's no desires can be seen. If they did arise, the samadhi would be shattered. The stillness would be gone. There'd be quivering, shaking, falling apart, movement, just like in ordinary existence. In that one peakedness of mind, the one summit of mind, which is ekagata. When you get to that one-pointedness, that degree of stillness, it's still, it's motionless, it's peace, it's strong peace, because you're experiencing freedom from desire, freedom from wind. Nothing is left to make you shake during the time of that one-pointedness. There you get to understand what we mean by freedom from desire. Samadhi has given you an insight. That feels so beautiful. The sukha, the happiness, when the mind no longer moves. The asavas can't occur, because there's nothing to blow the mind out from its home. You're inside, still, solid, at peace, blissed. This is showing you just the power of samadhi, why it is one of the most effective of those indriyas, and how it gives rise eventually to the most powerful indriya of all, wisdom, panya. Panya, everybody says they've got wisdom, just like everyone is above average intelligence. Everyone who's ever read a book upon Buddhism is an expert on it. That's why we always, it's very rare to find someone who's humble, who says, I really don't know, please teach me. Usually we already know. We already got our theories. We write and tell our friends about what Buddhism is. We're all teachers. We tell our mother or our father everything about Buddhism. Do you really know what you're talking about? Usually our panya, our wisdom, is much less than we imagine, or that we give ourselves credit for. But when we have samadhi, then you've got experience. You've got experience to fall back on. You know what samadhi is. You know what the freedom from this movement is. You know what stillness is. You've seen freedom from desires, at least to that degree. You know what peace is, what happiness is. You get an idea of why the Buddha taught this, for the happiness and well-being of all sentient beings. Not to give them a hard time, not to become famous, and so the Buddha will go down in history as a great man. He didn't do it for his own self-aggrandizement, didn't do it to start a religion. He did it for the happiness and well-being of all sentient beings, to teach them the truth of happiness and the way to happiness. By following this path. So you can see in your own practice here in this monastery, you've got 1 month to go for enlightenment. 1 month to go for jhana. At least 1 month to go to get your act together and keep your virtue intact, keep the core what. At least do that much. Otherwise, you're wasting your time and wasting other people's time as well. The moment there's a whole list of young men wanting to come and join this monastery as anagarikas. You're taking their place. How well are you spending your time? You've got a month to go. So just check your practice. Check your virtue. Check your meditation. Check your wisdom. Check your indriyas. What degree of faith have you got so far? Are you really committed to this? Giving it everything you've got? we are only half here and half somewhere else. Give all your energy just to one day. So you don't even think about tomorrow, the next day or whatever. Full commitment in the moment. Wholehearted in your meditation. Sometimes people ask me, why is it that sometimes lay people who do these short retreats, 9 days, why do they sometimes get these great meditations? Because for 9 days they give it everything they've got. They give it wholehearted commitment. As a layperson, they do that because they've only got 9 days. But sometimes for monks, especially being a monk for many years, you think, oh, there's always another year, there's always another wasa, 1 wasa, 5 wasas, 10 rains retreats, 15 rains retreats, I've done 29 rains retreats now. There's always another one next year. Because you don't put such wholehearted effort into what you're doing, you don't give it everything you've got. That's why sometimes the lay people get better results. But be careful, by wholehearted effort, put it into the right place. Not into doing. Doing, 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 getting, 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 getting. Put the effort into mindfulness, the effort into abandoning, the effort into renouncing. Keep the monastic rules, keep the precepts. Be simple. Be content with little. Just be secluded. Don't go around sort of telephoning people, talking to people. Be secluded. Be someone who hardly anyone notices. The invisible monk just comes for the meal and you don't even know they're there. Quiet. Non-existent. Gone, gone, gone. If one practices like that, the energy is going into the right place. Check those indriyas. Faith. Energy in the right place. The mindfulness is supervisor. Keep that supervisor strong. Wholehearted energy into the knower, mindfulness. Remember the instructions and keep to them. Don't deviate from the path. Make sure you've got Ujjupatipanna, the straight practice. And then samadhi will come. Once the samadhi is going, then basically I don't need to teach you very much then. Once samadhi is there, you've got the power, you've got the energy. The path is coming together. Wisdom will come. And then you'll be able to tell all of your friends what Buddhism is all about. Then you'll be able to write your books. Then you'll be able to tell your mum about what you've been doing. But until then, be humble, doubt all of your thinking, because later on you'll find that whatever you thought it would be, actually, it's something different. As the Buddha said in the Saporissa Sutta, where does it go? Yang yang manyati tang tang anyata. Whatever they think it to be, it is always something else. This is the people unenlightened. So that's an awada today, trying to encouraging you, because in the next couple of weeks I'm going to be doing my own retreat, putting my own energy into my practice, putting everything else aside, so I can enjoy the blisses of meditation. Because this is called, you know, the happy abidings. This is what one's supposed to be doing. So just because I'm not here, actually, because I won't be sort of visible, doesn't mean that it's an easy time for you. You should be doing even more practice, even more diligent, out of respect for me, out of respect for the Buddha, Dhamma and the Sangha, out of respect for all the people who bring alms to this monastery. You know the path, you know what needs to be done, so please don't mess around. Only 1 month to go. The Buddha said, if you follow this Satipatthana for 7 days, you can get fully enlightened. You've got a whole 30 days left. So it's 7 days to practice hard and 23 days after to celebrate. But don't do the celebration first. Do 7 days of proper practice and then I'll see you when I come out. So that's the talk for this evening.
Sama.